And now it's finally time for the Total War cast. Now, it's been Easter, where I had a long vacation. Before that, had a lot of stuff on school, but finally, I'm gonna do the number 5. Now, today with me, I have the Fallen Hun. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. It's nice to have you on here. So, do you want to tell a little bit about yourself, like where you're from and such?
Yeah, sure. I'm from California in the United States. I've been playing Total War since probably Medieval 2, and I'm really enjoying playing Shogun 2.
Oh, cool. So today we have a lot of special topics, but we're gonna keep it like we always do. We have Forum Frenzy, we have of course Tactical Terror, and of course we have Mod Corner. Well, today's Mod Corner, as I promised you, I have a interview with Wiz, a Danish guy who's working on Sakura mod, which is a great which is a historical accurate mod for Shogun 2. So that's gonna be awesome. And yeah, so you're ready, the Fallen Hun? You're not scared or anything?
Go for it.
Okay, that's great. Okay, well, after this little music short, we'll start with the Forum Frenzy. And now it's time for Forum Frenzy. Yes, finally. Oh, I missed this. Now, firstly, before me and the Fallen Hun gets into our topics for today, I'm gonna announce something that has. Okay, it was announced 11 days ago, but still, I'm gonna talk about it. It's the official DX11 statement. Now, basically, this thread on the official Total War forums, it says that it's a little bit. They talk a little bit about the patch 2, which is quite major. And what that is that they're gonna make it able for the like DX11, DirectX 11, and which people have been waiting on. And that also what they do is that people with DX11 capable cards will be able to access features such as hardware tessellation. Do you know what that is, the Fallen Hun? Tessellation.
Tessellation. I think it has something to do with how the level of dis de I mean, I wouldn't quote me on this, but it has something to do with how the level of detailing scale works, and it'll make the zoomed out ones look a little less pixelated.
Like anti, I thought that was AA, anti-aliasing.
Possibly. I mean, we can
Oh.
just.
Google it, and then Patchy will also do enhanced shadowing, so we'll get better shadowing. That's actually quite cool. The
Yeah.
problem is that it's quite late. They promised it, and I think that it's cool. It's okay, but they still shouldn't have promised it as they did. And we will get it in a get it. They say we're gonna get it in the first week of May. So, yeah.
Here I found it. Tessellation is where a figure is broken down into polygons, usually triangles, and then it's computed and it's rendered. And this makes it look better, and it's just going to give you an overall better look.
Yeah, from a distance.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. Okay, great. Yeah, that's the patch 2, which I've called it. They did the minor fixes, but there's still a lot of problems. We're gonna talk about some of them and some of the bugs, which is still actually some of the bugs which a person can actually exploit in multiplayer, which is. A
Yeah, we'll talk
huge,
about
yeah,
that
we're gonna
later.
do that later in after we're done with the main Forum Frenzy. Now, for now to the now to the real Forum Frenzy, which is a debate. Yes, a user named what was his name in? It's the same.
It was Date Haramune.
Thank you. I'm so bad at pronouncing names. Yes. Okay. What he says in this. Well, basically, what he says is that. Well, it's boring after you completed it once you complete it at all.
Yeah, they can't.
Yeah, for example, and of course we've talked about this a little bit before, but for me, I don't know, it's, I think that people don't see the whole aspect of the game, but what do you think?
Well, I personally, I could say there's somewhat of a point to it. There are the differences between the factions are smaller than in some of the other previous Total War games. And that's true. But I think that as a bonus for that, you get a much more balance between the clans, and you get, I still think that the way the alliances work out, you're going to get a unique play experience. So I think when people talk about it's the same thing every time, it's false on one hand because the game is not going to go down the same way. The different clans will survive, different ones will ally, different ones will betray, different ones will ally. So the map is going to play out differently every time. But I think their complaint is just that there aren't enough units, so once you beat the game once with all the units, you're pretty bored with it. And I can sort of understand how they would like more, but I think you had an interesting point about your Christian campaign.
My second one. Well, what I decided was that because I got the same feeling after completing, I played multiplayer, I completed one campaign and tried a little bit others, and then I took a break. And then I thought about it, but hell, I haven't done anything. I haven't tried all the units. I haven't, because I played like Mori the first time and I was really sea based and stuff like that. And then I decided to go with, which I think was Hojo. Or Shimazu. Yeah, Shimazu was it. And what I did was I went Christian campaign. And I did quite alright, but I seen, and it was a little more challenging because everybody hates you because you don't like, you're not a Buddhist. Yeah, and actually, but what I found out pretty quickly is that it's a weapon. Christianity is a weapon in this
Yeah, you
game.
can use the unrest.
That as well. And I like destroyed everything in front of me. Of course, that was boring after when I started really steamrolling
Yeah,
before the end of the campaign. And
there is always that period once you get so big, but I think that's every Total War game. Once you reach a certain size, nothing can stop you. In
yeah, I
fact,
think that's
I
good.
feel that the realm divide is a great counter to that, because previously you could just sort of bully all the smaller nations in the line and then pick them off one by one. Whereas in here, this ensures that you'll face meaningful military resistance after you get started.
Also, in other Total War games, you couldn't have a neighbor for 2-3 turns before they declared a war on you. So that's actually, I had a one province clan as my ally throughout the whole campaign, and he loved me.
I never got the hang of that. All my vassals, attempted allies, I guess because I play a really fast expansionist game with a huge military, all my allies just turn on me. I just guess I don't really feel the diplomacy is that important because my eventual goal is to crush all the other clans under my heel.
But I think you don't. That's something I did in the first campaign as well. But after that, I tried to like concentrate a little bit more on it,
Yeah, I think
and then I got a lot more, a hell of a lot more out of it. Shotokabe was my ally throughout the whole campaign, except on the last because I took their capital from an enemy of them because they took the island, the enemy
I see.
of Shotokabe, and I took it from the enemy. I didn't give it back, so they got really pissed at me, and then they attacked. So.
I see. For me, though, I totally agree about the second campaign is actually sometimes your best because you've worked out all the kinks, you know how the AI plays, and you want to go stuff you miss. I know in the first campaign, as Uesugi on hard, I didn't use my navy at all. Like, literally, I might have had one or two ships. So in my second campaign as Shimazu, I really made a focus on trying to hunt down the black ships and control the trade nodes. So it's very different.
I think that it's a lot easier to be on the left side than on the right side.
Oh yeah, especially as Uesugi, you have to like dive to the right side so you can get a nice wall and use the sea as sort of a border. so you don't get attacked from all sides.
Yeah. It's so I don't get the poster here as. I see some of his arguments, but still, I can't put myself in his shoes because
not everybody enjoys the same things in a game. Yeah. So, you know, if he didn't enjoy it, I think we both enjoyed it. Mm. And, you know, you'll never satisfy everybody with a game.
Yeah. My God. Yeah, but I think this game, it demands a lot more discipline from gamers. They have to find a lot. They have to look a little more. Look for.
Oh, yeah. Like, more, also.
Yeah, game play. They have to look.
Like, oh, sorry.
No, sorry. Just say what you're going to say.
Oh, I'm saying, like, for example, it's pretty hard to get a geisha.
Yeah, yeah. I know you actually tried them. Are they good?
You know, that's something I'm planning to do in my second campaign. I've been more focused on multiplayer, but in my Shimadzu campaign, there's definitely you have to build, like, at the maximum tier of the sake den tree.
Yeah.
And you have to get some research, yeah. And you have to also get imported silk from one of the trade nodes.
Mm.
But apparently they're very, very good at assassinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I also the little we talked now, we just ran off from a little bit from the topic. But still, you can see the way we talk now, we can see we haven't tried half the game out yet. A lot of different tactics and such like that. And something I haven't done is focus on Sen. I always focus on my armed forces.
Yeah. I've never gone all the way to epic architecture.
Me neither. But still, that's like, I feel that when you do that, you kind of give a little bit up and you try to find fight the defensive game. Because what you're going to do with that huge castle?
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, no, I don't know. No. I think that that this game demands a lot more from the player itself to find fun in it.
But it is a very fun, very well polished game.
Yeah, it is much more polished than we're not gonna walk into the Empire Garden.
Yeah,
it's so much hate and misunderstanding there, but whatever. I don't know. Do you feel that we've completed this topic now? Yeah, let's go on to the next one. Okay, this next one is written by, Sup All. Now, what he means is that campaign difficulty. He asked us, do we want which difficulty bonuses do you think the AI should get? Like campaign, battle, or both? In my eyes, I think that's only battle, maybe. At least in the later campaign, later in the campaign, to make it a little more difficult for steamrolling. But other than, I don't know. What do you think, Fulon? What do you want? Do you want the campaign or battle?
It sort of depends on, because he also has an option both. I would say that a high difficulty, both. At a lower difficulty, the battle AI. Because you're right, at the end, you know, once you've built up, you know, you've got, you know, your katana samurai with upgraded weapons. You've got your Naginata warrior monks. Maybe you've got a katana hero and your matchlocks and your veteran bow samurai. And you really want an opponent, you know, that will stand up to the pounding long enough to really see your army go into action. But what it does sort of turn out that by the end you can sometimes see on the lower difficulties especially, you're just going to face sort of a half-assed army of peasants that's just going to completely break under that.
Yeah, I know. I remember what Killing Field, I called it. It was the castle before Kyoto. And, like, everyone, that was like a funnel for Ashigaru armies. And they came in from different sides. But I had a hell of a lot of matchlock units. And to be honest, it was a slaughter fest. I mean, I don't know how many stacks of armies I killed, at 7 or something. Different, of course, different clans, but still, slaughter. And I lost very few people.
Yeah, so I would agree that maybe the battle AI is a little bit more important to boost to. I can understand how people would find that frustrating, like, oh, they're, you know, these bow samurai are standing up to my great guard, but It's a good test of your abilities, especially in prep for multiplayer.
I think that the battle AI would improve, not the AI, but I think the battles would be harder if the campaign got an economy bonus.
That is true. They would make better units, and they do. They do, in fact, I think, get, because what the poster said is that there are no unit stat bonuses on regardless of the campaign difficulty. And so, although on Legendary you might be facing endless hordes, they die just as easily as the others.
Yeah,
and so, if you have good, as you said, killing field, their numbers don't matter.
Yeah. I felt like the movie 300, to be honest. Only that I had a whole army with the bow and matchlock and everything.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter when you've got Gerard Butler.
Yeah. That's true. Oh my god. It's something I really enjoy about this game is that it's much faster. Like, for example, battles like sieges in other games, I feel that those are such a grind. It takes so much long time to do it efficiently and not lose too many troops, but here it's like, boom, done.
Yeah, and you can still lose troops. Like, you know, it's like in many of the first battles I ever played in Shogun 2, I lost several of them because I wasn't familiar with how to do it properly. Mm. I was too used to a very gullible Medieval 2 or that thereabouts AI, which I could totally push around, even with ridiculous troop disadvantages. So I, or like the first time I tried to use muskets, I'm like, let's, you know, put them out here and we'll just shoot at these people. But of course, you know, that the AI will send its cavalry right at them and it'll dive into your missile units.
Yeah.
And it'll really make you pay for unprotected generals and things like that.
Yeah. I experienced that. I, of course, experienced the other way around where you, like, they charge right into a spear wall. But I think that happened so few times now that I don't mind anymore. It's yeah.
Yeah, I would just agree that the AI is much smarter tactically. It knows when it's the defender and when it's the attacker, which was something immensely frustrating in other games when it would not be so sure. When it's the defender, the AI will know it has the clock with it. Yeah. And so, you know, it'll win if the clock runs out, and it'll totally run for a hill and arrange a defensive posture.
Mm.
And when you're on the defense, you can do the same. Yeah. So it does a lot of individual tactics a lot better in terms of keeping formation and striking the right unit combinations. And even I think I wanted to mention that the AI is really aggressive in this game, and that I feel is actually a very good thing for the campaign difficulty. Some people have said, you know, they like to turtle and develop their empire, but, you know, it's not period accurate. It was a fast time and a lot of warfare. Mm. And so it really helps that, you know, you can't just sit there. You've got to really be out there fighting. Otherwise, you know, the AI is going to run over you, which I really like. And, you know, it'll go and it'll hit undefended territories. And then sometimes, you know, I've had times where I was trying to pin down a clan, but they just kept reconquering territories. And I had to chase down their stacks instead of go after their territories. So I really like that improved tactical maneuvering.
I think, yeah, like you said, it's more historically accurate because what people don't see is that, in, for example, Medieval 2, that's how many years are those campaigns? That campaign, again?
How many what?
How many years is the Medieval 2?
I think it ranges from, like, 1200 to 1475, if my recollection is correct.
Yeah, and that's a hell of a lot more than, for example, this era.
The turn times are roughly equivalent, but the way the game is structured, you have to move.
Be more active. You have to be more active, basically, because it's a smaller landmass, and you have seasons instead of years.
Yeah. And of course, the winter issues, though we did see those in, you know, in previous games.
Attrition.
Yeah, the attrition and the high seas attrition, too.
Yeah, I like that. I liked high seas attrition.
Though I didn't like the way the pirates were. You know, this was just a small thing about, I wish you could track down and destroy the pirate bases. even though historically being constantly harassed by pirates is very accurate.
Yeah, but wasn't they from Korea, most of the hid or something? I remember I read something about those pirates that they're, I don't remember in which time period, but they were hunted down. A group of pirates were hunted down and slaughtered. So
the Chinese did it.
Yeah,
they got so fed up with it that they did it.
Yeah, tank. Yeah. Like, I don't know, I would be freaking pissed. I would ask a couple of clans, like, okay, let's go get them.
Well, the problem was that we're getting a bit off topic, but I think historically the clan leaders would encourage them to harass another clan leader's trade, and that was part of the problem.
Okay, well, I'll have a trade toller off. But, yeah, I think that the campaign is the only thing that should be boosted, and not economy. Maybe give them more money, but let them give the opportunity to get better units.
They already have enough money, especially if you play on hard or higher. They do pull full stacks out of nowhere really rapidly, and you'll sometimes have to face, 4,000 men at once. So I'm not sure if they need more. Maybe in late game they need more, but especially I don't like one province clans having 20 units.
No, that's something I don't like either. It's like unrealistic, but
it helps make the early game the hardest part of it. So they've made it a really good way to make the early game very challenging and very chancy, but the late game, maybe they need to have some sort of bonuses that scale up as the game goes on.
Yeah. I agree. Okay, we trailed a little bit off there at the end, but sorry guys, that's just talking, conversation, you want to move on to the multiplayer section of Forum Frenzy?
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay, this time we divided a little bit because multiplayer, it's like a different setting, but yeah, of course, we're going to talk about something that has come up, and it's a bug exploit, which is cloning. Now, Defolon, I want you to explain what this is, because you
experienced it. As I understand it, because it may have happened to me, and I wasn't looking out for it, but the most explicit way, and I've seen screenshots of it and enough complaints about it that I'm fairly certain it exists, because the most explicit form of it is when somebody uses, I don't understand exactly how this is accomplished, but it has something to do with a little trick in the unit selection that can allow you to bring in, say, 2 fire-projecting mangonels when you're only allowed 1. And you can also use it to say you have your favorite rank 9 katana hero who you spent 50 clan tokens on. There's a way to – you can use that same bug to make it have 5 of him in the army.
5. And, shit.
Instead of having to level up 5 separate katana veterans and win all those clan tokens.
Okay.
So this is actually a pretty interesting bug, because some people might say that you could say that for the artillery, it's an absolute out, nobody should have 2 artillery. This is just a thing that unless you're using the bug, you can't get it. Whereas they could also argue, if I'm a new rank 10, I don't want to spend all this time having to level up 8 separate veterans of Naginata warrior monks when I'm facing people who have already spent the time doing it. So there's
but that's wrong, like on several levels, to be honest, that argument. Basically because if a guy uses so much time to get those units, he deserves using them.
Yeah.
But still, we can argue about, which I talked about last time, it's like unfairness in different level players, where a early level 10 gets beaten by a older level 10 because he has a lot more
veterans. And I can tell you that, just as a brief aside, that because this was discussed in a previous Warcast, as somebody who's a higher rank, when I'm faced with a rank 1, I bring 240 men total. I bring a unit of fire rockets, I bring a unit of Great Guard, and a unit of Naginata warrior monks, and I've faced maybe 10 or 15 rank 1s with this, and I've never lost a battle with it. And it always, in the post-screen, it shows men deployed, me 240, men deployed, them 1,200.
Yeah, and of course that's not right, in my opinion, but yeah, well, I don't know, it's the cloning, they should fix immediately, because agreed, that's a exploit, and in the multiplayer I wouldn't mind in single player, Because
Oh
that's
yeah,
something.
single player, do what you want.
Yeah, like if you want to make every unit pink and blow hearts at each other, do that. We don't care. But in multiplayer, something else, because then they have to deal with other
Yeah.
people.
Just as a general statement about Shogun multiplayer is that it's sort of a game that was never really a game type that was never really designed with multiplayer in mind, and although they've done an excellent job of trying to balance it out, and they've made it really fascinating. It's not like StarCraft 2, where it's super polished, cheating is punished with extreme severity, but there are only a few reliable builds. Whereas, what you call the metagame of Shogun 2 is fascinating because there are great strategies with just about each and every unit, and the veteran upgrade system and the avatar upgrade system make it a really varied game.
It does, truly. Yeah, okay. Okay, we're done with actually Foreign Frenzy now, aren't we? Is something you want to add before we go over to the next segment?
No, I think we can go on.
Okay, great. Okay, guys, that was Foreign Frenzy. After this short musical tape, we're gonna move on to Tactical Terror. So, see you then. And now, guys, it's time for Tactical Terror. Yes, we're back with Tactical Terror, and this time again, we're going to talk about multiplayer, since the Fallen Hun is a, in my eyes, a good multiplayer player. Okay, firstly, we're going to talk about the use of fire rockets. Now, do you want to, like, take off here, Robert, if you want?
I might want to take a little time to say, people who might have seen me on the forums, at the outset, I was really opposed to the inclusion of artillery in multiplayer in general, and especially as a rank one, you get kicked around a lot by upper rank players, and so I had a lot of really angry threads about hill camping and fire rocket users, especially, even more so than mangonel users. But, there's a really good player, even much better than me, Gamblefish, who really introduced me to using them tactically, and it vastly improved my winning abilities. Because, although arguably they are a cheap tactic, there are so many tactics that you could argue are cheap. I could argue that spending the whole game trying to hide your Yari cav in the forest and snipe my general doing that is cheap. But, it's a tactic everyone can use. And there are other tactics that are similar.
Okay.
So it's not exactly unfair.
Okay, yeah, because fire rockets, those are quite how much do they cost? How many units do you sacrifice to get the fire rockets?
They cost base 1200. I have rank 7 fire rockets that cost 1450.
Okay.
And you also have to sacrifice a retainer for the ox carts.
Yeah.
And but I feel they're worth it because aside from their general killing capabilities, because if I were to say if you put a unit of bowmen on loose and I fired a salvo into them, I wouldn't kill very many people. It wouldn't be an effective use of my fire rockets.
No, but you use them for more specified tasks, I would
General
presume.
and anti-cavalry
Yeah,
because
yeah.
in sort of Because they're anti-cavalry, they also happen to be anti-general. I tend to, because they outrange bow units by a fair amount, even an upgraded fire rocket is outranges an upgraded bow hero.
Oh,
And
that long.
yeah,
Okay.
because bow hero is base 200, and I'm not sure how many range upgrades it gets. And a fire rocket is base 250 and can get 325 yard increases.
Okay. But the question, with the artillery, you know the ring you see? The range ring, which increases the farther away you aim?
Fire rockets do not have that.
They do not have that.
Fire rockets are 30 guys carrying rocket guns.
Yeah, I know
They
that,
can
but
move, they can
still,
run.
the larger the range away, do their accuracy decrease?
I think there's also a minimum range, but I would agree that at maximum range, they're a little less accurate than in mid-range, but I found them to be very deadly even at the edge of their cone, and they don't have the same kind of spread that mangonels and European cannons do.
Okay. So no, not the same as artillery then. Okay, that's not reassuring for people who meet them, but...
Well, I've heard, because Gandalfish is now, he's using fire rockets a lot, but now he's touting his rank 11 European cannons, which supposedly have almost unrealistic accuracy. But that's another thing. But for me, I just find that they save my ass in a lot of games, especially against, I think I told you about this, I may have told you about this, there was some hill camper who was taunting me and saying... Yeah. Oh, I'm just here reading my book and yada, yada, yada. Come on and get me. And I managed to maneuver around and up over a hill and get a clear shot off at his general, killing his general, causing him to rage quit. And that was an immensely satisfying battle. And of course, but I also run into people who, when I kill their general, say very mean things to me, or just be very rude about it, say, oh, you're a total noob, or that's extremely cheap. You
Well, you're on the internet, so that's just how you how the people deal with losing.
But you just see a lot of, just be prepared to see a lot of anger if you bring them. But, and also, I think now a lot more people are using them than they used to, because people thought, oh, they're just inaccurate. But aside from their well-known general here's some general tips to using them. Spread them out into one rank, because anybody in the second rank does not fire their fire rockets. And although it'll reduce the number of salvos you get into five if you have them completely spread out, having everyone fire at once is immensely powerful. It gives you a huge number of rockets, and I found that they're, especially with their accuracy upgrade, and especially if you have a leadership general using Inspire on them, they can hit a running general at their maximum range very easily and kill most of his bodyguard.
Okay.
And they're also great on, I know I have a, in fact, I have a video of this on YouTube. A guy, he thinks I'm distracted with his main melee force, and he has hidden four units of Yari cavalry in the trees, and he makes a run for my general. One salvo from the fire rockets pretty much completely routes all four.
All four?
Yeah.
And you have a video of this?
Yeah, it should be on my YouTube.
Okay. I'll take a link later after the show, and I'll put it on the thread so people can look at that.
Definitely.
So they can see how effective... Yeah, I remember we play a 2v2 together, and... I could see the effectiveness there, but the problem there is that it's so small unit sizes, so you can't really see
devastation.
Yeah, they were playing
on small unit sizes, so everything was weird.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything more to add on the fire rockets?
If you use fire rockets, maybe try and hide them in the woods at the beginning of the game, and when you fire that first salvo, always try and use Inspire on them, because it drastically increases their efficacy.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, so that's use of fire rockets. Now, we use a lot of time on this. Next one is gonna be another unit, talk about the unit, which is bow cavalry and use of that. Now, do you want to take this off again?
Similarly, this isn't one where I'm sort of coming from the opposite side, where I sort of grudgingly admit that they have their usefulness, but they're not a unit that I prefer to use. And I also see them coming into greater use. This is something I talk about a little more generally later, but it's coming into greater use at 22K. And because I feel that they're small, they're 60 horses, as opposed to, say, for example, the largest bow unit is going to be the Bow Ashigaru at a 120. And so I feel like the lessened arrow volume, and the fact that they're the lessened arrow volume somewhat diminishes their usefulness for their price. And I've personally never been in a battle where I've had bow cavalry used against me effectively.
Okay, so you're on this one. You're on the other side. You don't really think that the bow cavalry have a good use.
I think they have a good use, but it's sort of like It assumes, and as I said, I've seen some convincing arguments from other players about this, and I would have to see some of it played against me to be very convinced. But I think that their main use is to inspire imperfect play decisions in the other player. You know, you try and chase after them, you try and And that's something I always try to avoid. I always try to make sure to remember that whenever I see a general suddenly run out stupidly, I always remember, okay, he's got matchlocks right behind that general. It's not an easy target. Things like that. Is that the bow cavalry are used because they can even properly managed bow cavalry can even avoid incoming salvos from enemy missile troops because they don't have better range than, say, bow warrior monks. So if used properly, if not responded to on lower funds when you're not going to have that many of them, they're good for inspiring people to move out of formation, do stupid things, and make stress decisions.
Harassing, basically.
Harassment. On higher funds, when you can get, as some of the players use, maybe 5 or 6 of them, the fact that they're so hard to catch actually does become a bit of a unit liability because, I saw one tactic the way they described it, I would have to see this played. They said they don't want to move their main force. They're just going to send the bow cavalry at you and try and make you take arrows while you walk all the way to their units because the bow cavalry outrange muskets and they can avoid incoming enemy fire.
Okay.
So I could see how that could be kind of annoying, and I know in other Total War games, bow cavalry, in fact, in multiplayer for Medieval 2, most players played with an unwritten rule that you could only bring a certain number of bow cavalry.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think about hill campers using that tactic, because you're getting the hill camp is forced almost to, for example, with if they have artillery, like you have to attack.
Yeah, and you have to walk through the horse bow spam. And in fact, I have another video on my thing where I do face a very bad opponent. Like I'm not gonna maybe just the player is just new, I guess. But I do face a substantial number of bow cavalry, but managed very poorly.
Yeah, he wasted them basically.
Yeah. But I agree that when you have a hill camper and they have units like they can send out bow cavalry and they can sit with the artillery, it does because unlike in the campaign where you have a clock and a defined attacker and defender, and the defender does get advantages because, okay, if they lose, they're going to probably lose provinces or land, so the defender can have an advantage. So whereas in the game, it sort of requires a little bit of polite agreement and tactical maneuvering. And so I'm not. I feel ambivalent about their use as a tactic, but I could understand the usefulness, even though in my battles I've never seen bow cavalry used very well.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Actually.
As a tip for using for fighting against bow cavalry, I found out that they cannot avoid. That the musket bullet is sort of a formality in the image. They can't avoid the musket shot. So if you can somehow persuade bow cavalry to come inside musket range, you can kill them, whereas arrows they can avoid, but you might have to hide
them. How well can they avoid... I used bow cavalry on my single-player campaign, but I never used them on multiplayer. How well can they dodge arrows?
By people who have them well upgraded, they claim almost completely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, because I played the single player and I got not decimated, but archers was able to hurt my bow cavalry. So I think it's a good harassing unit, but I can't like you. I don't feel that it packs the punch of a unit who can like destroy other units. I think it's more a harassment and forcing.
I would love to see, because I've heard many claims, but as of yet not substantiated, about the powers of using 6 or 7 heavy veteran bow cavalry on 22K funds. Because, in fact, our next topic, in fact, is going to be the effects of 22K funds.
Yeah, so a lot difference in tactics. Yeah, we're going to do that next. So are you done with bow cavalry? Can we move on to like the...
Pretty much, yeah. I'm
done. Yeah, okay. The next one is the Fallen Hun, and we're going to discuss, well, mostly the Fallen Hun is going to talk about the way the tactics radically change when it hit 22K. Now, okay, you can start off introducing this topic if you want.
Okay, as you may or may not know if you play multiplayer or not, there are several tiers of allowable funds and with which you buy your army for multiplayer. Ranks, I think 1 to 3 are 5K, 4 to 6 I'm just guessing here, are 10K, and 7 to 9 are 14K, and then rank 10s are 22K. And in case of a rank imbalance, say a rank 10 plays a rank 1, you play with the lowest ranked player's funds, in that case 5K. And you're going to see differences in play, and because you're going to be playing lower ranked players, you're going to have armies ready for these. But I feel that the place where the game is really going to evolve in a competitive sense is the 22K, because that is the high ranked players and the biggest unit sizes.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot more to be keep track of when you have a huge army.
Oh yeah. As I said before, on 5K, I bring a total of 4 units, including my general.
Yeah.
And it's just very different, and there's some arguments over fairness of it, especially against the more experienced ranked 10s versus the newer ranked 10s.
No, even that, I thought it was like a huge difference just between level 1s and level 10s. Okay. I thought that was enough.
I wouldn't reasonably expect a level 1 to beat a level 10 under just about any circumstances.
Yeah, that's something I don't like at all. I think that, of course, it should be... like higher ranked players should be able to face a little bit lower, but not that low where it's like impossible to win. I think that's completely wrong by CA to make it like that, but that's just me and my way of
it's just the nature of the beast and the customizability. It's the nature of the veteran system and the unlocking unit system.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like that's wrong. For example, if I play a shooter game, it's my quickness and my skill which determines if I can
versus shoot. Their speed hacks.
Right, though. Yeah, it's enough of that. But still, my quickness and my reflexes and my skill which determines if I can kill him first or he can... Of course, it's a little bit luck as well, but that doesn't come in as much in like strategy games because you have to do a lot more.
I agree with you, and that's what I was saying earlier about how Shogun 2 is sort of a fascinating game because it's not a very fair game. And because it's not very level and balanced, there are really weird tactics and units. And there's a certain degree, it's a mind game. It totally is a mind game. It's about convincing the other guy to move into your killing field or, who's going to turtle, who's going to rush. And there's totally a lot of how the players interact with each other is just as important as their army selection.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, as I think, it's quite more historically accurate that it's like this, because if war is unfair, but of course it's not historically accurate if a 4-unit army can beat 1,200 men.
Yeah, well, that usually happens after the fire rockets of the Great Guard take down their general and then everybody routes.
Yeah.
But what I was talking about 22K is that it was a little bit of a shock to me when you face the more experienced rank 10 players, and you think you're pretty hot shit because you've been playing pretty well up to that point, and then you face some guy and he's got 5 units of rank 9 matchlock warrior monks, and these things are virtual machine guns, and even if you're fielding the exact same unit composition and you're playing better but with fewer veterans, he's probably going to win, especially if you have, say, all your veterans are rank 2 and his are rank 9.
Yeah.
You're just going to get slaughtered. And in fact, for the new players, they often find that whereas on 14K, they were limited in the amount of units they could bring. They couldn't fill the unit cards up with their best veterans. On 22K, a new rank 10 may not be able to fill up, in fact, often won't be able to fill up the units with all his best veterans. Whereas a veteran rank 10 will have, all of those hugely powerful. And I mean, the units can get really powerful. Like, they can get much more powerful than their vanilla form. Like, take a unit of Katana Samurai, then compare it to a rank 9 Katana Samurai with sword specialization abilities, Bonsai, improved armor, improved attack, improved defense, improved charge, and it becomes a whole different animal that's much stronger and, in fact, can beat its traditional encounters. Like, a unit of upgraded Great Guard can totally crush an unupgraded unit of Yariyashigaru in a frontal charge.
Yeah, of course, that's something they did, which I like it a little bit, the system with veteran units. You get attached to some of the units.
Oh, yeah, you get to name them. And,
I called mine, I don't remember, what did I call my... Yeah, unicorn assault, and I pinked them red, made them pink my light cavalry.
Well, I've got my rank 7 fire rockets that are called "Your General is Dead, Bro."
Yeah. And actually, that's like really offending people. You're dead, mate.
Well, the other unit that I swap out when those fire rockets get units is a rank 6 fire rockets called "Lull Owned You Noob."
Well, yeah, I think that you're the best troll out there when it comes to multiplayer. Sorry, I'm gonna do a little bit off topic. I'm gonna ask you because I know that you play like a really you offend some people when you play sometimes because you're you tag like that. I'm thinking about, do you think it's a good tactic to offend other players so you get mad? Does he make mistakes then?
In some circumstances, I would say overall no, with a huge exception because of the Alt-F4. If you piss a guy off really bad, if you look like you're going to win, he's just going to go. Just going to exit out of his game and deny you the victory. So right now, as the game stands, it's probably not a great idea to really piss off your opponent. Also, they're going to do, it's going to encourage them to hill camp, and it's a game where impolite play can really affect the balance.
Yeah.
And so I'd say in a game like StarCraft, where they're going to play the same whether you talk trash to them or not, it's not a big deal, and so I'll totally, and I'll do it. And sometimes I can inspire them to make bad decisions, and it can make that victory a little bit sweeter if you know that you've really sent them storming off to rage.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's something I still tend to do, but in fact, I've sort of lessened my playing of, due to the various number of bugs, one that dropped me down from my rank, like it dropped me down like 5,000 spaces in my rank, and I'm not the only guy this has happened to. It's a very consistent bug.
It is. They have to fix that because people get ranks and people care about that. I don't care that much about ranks, but
yeah,
somebody
but
does.
I was getting to a pretty high rank, so
yeah,
it really did bug me. And as well as just, you know, you play so many people, and then they all have four out from under you right after your really hard fought victory.
Yeah. Yeah, so, because I feel like I'm not there like that. I don't think it's. I know I've met a lot of Americans which are like you, which doesn't care if they attacks offend somebody. I was like that when I was 14 years old. No offense to you, but I don't know what happened to me because I didn't feel it was necessary. I didn't want to use energy on offending other people, and I feel that I go by the rule that you do something to people that you want other people to do to you. And I feel that, yeah, I don't like that at all. That flame kicking off.
It's just my sense of humor. And, you know, people would argue that it might come back to bite me. I know there was an issue where multiple people made threads complaining about me on the forums.
Yeah, but that's not allowed at all, but still.
Yeah,
that's
but I thought that was really funny.
That's actually most worse, hanging out people, because it's happened in one game. And you do not go out on the internet and then bash someone. I think that's bullying, and I don't like that, especially in a community.
Yeah,
I can understand if you complain about a clan, like they did with the TVC clan, basically, and I understand that, but the problem, what they didn't see was that it was too many people to control. But if it was a smaller clan, the clan leader, if he wanted to, or the majority of the members could straighten out those guys who were acting badly, but when you come to this large group, you can't. But still, I think that a good behavior on the internet...
I think it's a good general just to not make threads about people at all, because, you know, especially people can change their Steam names all they want,
yeah.
So it's hard to track them. And also, it inspires sort of a tattling atmosphere, like, oh, I don't like this guy. And so once you start saying, oh, this guy is cheating, then somebody else thinks it's okay, like, to make a threat. Oh, this guy is a camper, you know, he's not doing anything.
The problem being is that people, users on a forum, is more attached to that user than on Steam, for example, because then you can just change names.
Yeah.
I think you can change names on TVC. I think you have to apply for it. But I think that's wrong, because I am known as Daily, and I am also known as, I have another name, my Norwegian nickname, and I wouldn't change that for the world, because it's something that's me, that's like my name, I don't want to change that, because now I found a nickname that works for me, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, whatever, people get attached, whatever, blah, blah, trailed off. Are you done? By the
I
way.
wanted to actually add a little bit more to say about 22K. This is more generally less about the unfairness or balance, just about trends I've seen in the 22K.
Yeah.
Like an interesting tactic I saw the other day was I was trying to hide in the woods from a guy using superior musketry.
Yeah.
And he had a bunch of light cavalry units that were, he used two in fact, that were upgraded with spotting.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually allowed him to fire into the forest, and that was something I hadn't seen on lower funds. You'll also see a lot more monk units. You tend to see, it's not uncommon to see an army made up entirely of matchlock warrior monks and naginata warrior monks, because even if the general dies, they'll totally keep on fighting for a long time.
Yeah.
And so you tend to see big monk armies and big matchlock armies on 22K, and of course the occasional big cavalry army. But, you know, it's limited by the fact that the best cavalry, great guard, you can only get two of them.
Okay, yeah. I agree. It's people have to prepare themselves for a hard battle when they hit level 10.
I know, in fact, a lot of rank 10s complain that people, when they see them in the matchmaking, they just immediately quit the game.
Because I know, yeah, because I look at him and I, oh my god, he's good.
Yeah, it's happened to me several times.
That when people saw you.
Yeah, they see my rank in matchmaking, they're like a rank 1 or 2, and they just go, boop.
Yeah, well, that can I understand. If they're level 1 or 2, they're not experienced multiplayer gamers. I let them drop, to be honest.
Yeah,
those guys. Well, those guys, I understand, but level 10, then you're like a little bit more experienced. It's like more.
I've also heard complaints about level 10s not wanting to ever face other level 10s, because you can effectively. I mean, that's the huge problem about the Alt F4 bug, is that it makes the stat boards essentially meaningless, as you can totally use it to give yourself perfect record.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if I see a guy with 50-0, I know that he's.
I saw 150-0.
Yeah, well, you know that he's a Alt F4.
Or also, here's another fun fact that a lot of people might not know, is that if you set up a custom battle with a friend, it totally counts like it was a normal 1v1. You can get experience, unlock units, unlock clan provinces, and upgrade veterans, and change your record using it. So it's also possible you just had a friend lay down 150 times.
Yeah, this is something like CA has to be, like, for example, Blizzard with StarCraft 2, they know they have a lot more experience with multiplayer games than what the CA has with Total War. I think this is extremely important for CA to note down for future games and try to fix.
Yeah.
And they have to fix it on this game as well. They have to look at these things. I can't believe they didn't, but. Yeah, what can you do? It's like hard. Seriously, we've had the longest tactical terror ever. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's good. Thank you for giving us all those nice talk. We actually talked for 26 minutes. That's awesome. Guys, we are gonna be me and the Fallen Hunter gonna be back off for the completion of the podcast. But next is Mod Corner, where we're gonna have an interview with Wiz, a Danish guy who is, like I said, who works on Sacramod. And this is pre-recorded a week ago. So I'll thank you for listening to Mod Tactical Terror, and we'll be back right after Mod Corner. Say goodbye to Fallen.
Bye.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to be back after. It's 15 minutes, so I'll see you then. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mod Corner. Now, this time, we have a special surprise. Like I stated in the last episode, on episode 4, was that we should have a interview that time, but of course things happened and that fell out. This time though, we actually are gonna do it, and with me I have Wiz.
Hello.
Yeah, so do you want to tell a little bit about yourself?
Like, yeah, I'm Wiz, and I'm part of the Sakura Total War mod for Shogun Total War 2, and I'm a historical researcher and the mod. And I'm also part of the TVC Center forum, where my name is W-I-S, Wiss.
Yeah, and you're from Denmark.
Yeah, I'm from Denmark,
yeah,
Copenhagen.
Cool. Fellow Scandinavian in the podcast, that's of my liking. Today we're going to talk about Sakura. And Sakura is a total revamp of Shogun 2. What is Sakura? Do you want to tell a little bit about Sakura?
Yes, Sakura is a historical mod for Shogun Total War 2, and our aim is to make it as historically correct as possible. It can be limited in some ways because obviously you can't have historical accuracy in every part of the game because the game is limited in itself. So our aim is to make it as historical possible, historical accurate as possible.
Yeah. Okay. So you're gonna back of my mind, you're gonna try to change some of the aspects of the game. Something I'm wondering about is like, what is it? Have you already discovered some things about the game? For example, provinces which have wrong names, or is it something like that? Have you already discovered things that you wanted to change that immediately?
We can't go in and add in more provinces, but we already found out that there's a lot of historical provinces are missing in the game. So unless they release some kind of modding tools where we can alter the map.
Unless they release that, we won't see any new provinces.
But the first changes you're gonna see in an alpha or beta build is the heraldry and colors and historical units maybe even then we're gonna remove a lot of things from the vanilla game.
Yeah. One thing I wonder about was what are the when you go into a Sakura mod after you guys have released the mod, what are the biggest changes about the game? What will we first see that you guys have changed, which is huge changes to the mod? What is that?
Huge changes. It's not. I don't think that's gonna be. What you got, an epic change to the game.
No, of course, the news TV.
Mostly it's going to be, because I think there's quite a lot of historical accuracy in the game to begin with. So, but some first-hand changes are going to be, I think we're going to remove some factions and maybe even rename it. But it also depends on what starting year we are going for.
You haven't found out which year you're gonna start in yet.
It might be the vanilla year, 1545.
Yeah.
But some of us are arguing for maybe 1560 because it makes more sense.
Yeah, I can think that because the war didn't actually escalate until that time, or
no, it didn't actually escalate before 1560 when. Imagawa Yoshimoto, he started his march on Kyoto, and Oda Nobunaga was the first person to stand in his way.
Mm.
And from that point, it just evolved into a struggle for the middle of Honshu.
Okay.
So it makes more sense, but we're having a bit trouble with unlocking the factions. Also, some of the tools for modding Shogun Total War 2 has just been released. Pack editors and so on.
Oh, it has. Okay, good. Yeah. So, okay. So, I hope that we can see a lot of changes. I actually miss some of the largest mods from large modding changes. For example, with Medieval 2 and such. Do you think that the CA will make it possible for us to actually make such huge mods, or are we going to stay with stale mods for the game?
I think I belong to the group that says that the possibility of us seeing modding tools that it has really altered the future Chote War games. It's next to nil, I think.
Yeah.
They might release some kind of commercial uniform editor or something minor like that. There's also been some talks about them doing some database lectures on how to edit it. I think they are a bit about that on the TV season.
Okay, you're talking about the encyclopedia. Okay, so you can like make it more. What do you mean? Give it a little more read to it. Actually, that's something I miss.
That's CA wants to teach us how to edit.
That's what I'm asking about. Yeah. Like, I miss that because I like history myself, and I miss that it was just low standard history. It wasn't like delved in. It should be like a button where you could just expand, and you got like a whole history lesson almost from some of the like units or stuff like that. I miss something like that, but yeah.
Yeah, but when. For example, some of the units you won't be seeing in the Sagwa mod is katana samurai units and katana cavalry.
Oh, wow. Like
some of the only katana using units you're going to be seeing are samurai retainers.
Oh, okay. But will samurai retainers, will they be a playable unit or like except for like can you take them outside the castle or are they just in like a garrison?
So far, if you think it makes sense for them to just be garrisoned units,
okay,
so you won't be able to actually train them.
Okay. Well, why is that? Do you want to like now? I'm curious. Why is that? Why won't we see katana samurai or katana samurai cavalry?
Mainly because there were no mass formation of katana wielding units in that age, since the spear was the most common weapon during that age. But you might be able to see different kinds of spear units.
Ah, yeah, of course. Yeah, that would actually be something I missed because, I know that that was something that really, because I read myself up on the history, and that was, the longer it was really common to get like Yari Ashigaru with longer spear and longer spear. The longer the better, somebody said. And actually, I remember one of the... It was almost 5 meters, the longest one, I think. No longer. It was like 8 meters something. It's really long, some of the longest one. Is that possible to mod the spear length, get the range up? So if they are in a spear formation, the spear wall formation, can you edit the length of it? Because I think it's quite actually small in difference to actually what it was.
I don't think it should be a problem trying to edit the length of the spears. Okay. You can always see the difference in the length between Yai Samurai and Yai Ashigaru.
Yeah.
I find it funny that Creative Assembly, they released the Yai Ashigaru with the uncommon spear. In fact, they released it with the crescent-shaped spear.
Yeah. What's it that called again?
I can't really remember.
No, me neither. Yeah, that's actually weird. But remember that for CA has always been like not really that fond of historical accuracy. I cannot totally understand that basically because it's like they have to. What can I say? It has to appeal to the masses. Yeah. If they want to get sales. So I actually think that
want their units to look cool.
Yeah, that too. But also I think that it's important not to make... For example, if you look at some of the mods for Rome, like which really detailed and it's a lot of units and it's a lot of stats and you have to get really delved into it. If they release a game like that, I think it's going to be too complicated for most of the new gamers. I think it's important to keep it simple, but that's just my opinion. Moving on, what is your progress so far? Have you gotten any progress?
So far, the progress has been that a lot of historical research is needed, and that's where my job is.
Yeah.
Most of the actual modding members are still looking at the database files and are looking at what can be changed and what can't be changed.
Mm.
That's the progress so far, and I've gathered a lot of material. I even went so far as to that I have bought a couple of Japanese historical books, and one of the great things about Sakura Mod is that we have two actually native Japanese speakers on the team, so we can actually get Japanese sources and translate them to get the to get historical information.
Okay, I think that's actually going to be a huge part of your historical research.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of, I think that if they can, like, I think most information ever about our own country is in its own language. So I think it's important to have it like that, for example. Well, yeah. So, and especially Japan, which is like, I don't think that's been like really researched, for example, like with the Rome and the... in the Europe and stuff. So I think
that's not that many Western historical researchers who have concentrated on Japanese history in all its part. My current progress is that I've been gathering heraldry for the different daimyos and clans to get the most historical correct ones.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you'll notice in the game is the correct use of heraldry. And one of the things we're aiming for is to get generals and daimyos represented by their own heraldry.
Yeah, yeah.
So have you played the Roma Resurrectum mod?
Roma Resurrectum.
Yeah. Where they have different legions in it, and each legion uses its own heraldry. We might aim for something similar where you can. Where you can train different kinds of Yai Ashigaru with their own different colors.
Yeah, because I don't remember. Again, my problem is that I can't remember a thing I read on a historical page of the forums.
Yeah.
But I remember with one of the daimyos, we actually expertized. Like, he was a really good Ashigaru trainer. He was really, he believed in the like common folk, and he really went in to train them for a like a big purpose in his army.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his name. What was it? But like something like, for example, if it was a daimyo who expertized and like really focused on that, I think it would be really cool to have like those Oyari Ashigaru are a little bit better and something like that.
Yeah, that could also be something we could change. We are still open to suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, we got a thread in the modding section of the Total War Center forum.
Yeah, that's actually quite important. So people, if you, for this is so important, if you hear something on here on the podcast, for example with Sakura Mod, go into the thread and be active. It's really important. And if you want something, just ask or something. Really important that you be active. Now to one of the final questions. What is the goal of Sakura Mod? What is the final goal? Like, have you set a final mark from this? When we reach this goal, we are done. Or what is the goal of Sakura?
Well, I would say it would be to create a, when it's done, to have a comprehensive historical mod that's actual fun and historical correct at the same time. So I don't really think that that it shouldn't be fun just because it's a historical mod. But I would also like to have the same atmosphere around this mod as the Third Age Total War mod for medieval Total War kingdoms. That would be an awesome goal, I think.
Oh, you mean like get the same hype around it?
Yeah,
because actually that's something I really miss from, like, I played Third Age as well, and I really love how, like, that's really, a lot of people play that mod, and I think that's important that we still keep that, because that, like, it makes the game so much more, the replay value, like, increases so much. I think that's
CA.
I think CA really destroys some of the aspects of Total War games when they do not encourage modding. You can see that people still play games because of the mods, and if they do not have that, games often die. And I think that's a really huge. But of course, EA has a different strategy. So I don't know.
Having people 10 years from now on still playing Shogun Total War 2 just for the sake of playing the Sakura mod would be awesome in itself.
Yeah, correct. But yeah, I can't wait actually to play your mod. I'm of course a single player, so I'm more into like testing out mods and stuff like that instead of like going at it with on multiplayer. But yeah, really looking forward to this. You're gonna try to be more of a like, for example, Romus Erectum is a good example. You're gonna try to be more like a mod like that, or is there someone else you want to put by example?
I would say Ran no Jidai, if anything, because a lot of the members we have in the team are from the same mod. In fact, the same people who created that.
What mod was that?
The Ran no Jidai for Rome Total War.
Oh, okay, yeah. So yeah, are you guys experienced? Have you done modding before? Now I'm talking about, of course, your team.
Yeah,
but
yeah, the team is very experienced, I would say.
Okay.
One of the guys even works as a texturer at the, I think it was Paradox.
Ooh.
in his work. But yeah, these people are really experienced.
Yeah, isn't that like a little bit traitorous to be like a texture worker at Paradox and then you come here to work at mods for Creative Assembly's games?
I think he does it. working for the Sakura mod is just his spare time.
Yeah, just don't tell anyone. Okay. I think that is it for us. I really want to thank you, Wes, for being on.
Yeah, thank you for letting me.
No problem. Yeah, finally got it done. Yeah, we've been slacking off.
I wanted to be part of the third podcast, but
yeah, but now it's the fourth up, and now you're gonna be on the fifth. So we've been slacking off. It happens. But thank you for being on. And guys, next up is this is pre-recorded, so I can't know which is up. But I'll see you in the next segment. And thank you, Wiz, for being here. And see you in a bit. And that was Mod Corner with Wiz from Sakura Mod. Thank you for like a week in the future. Thank you. I want to thank him for doing this interview. It was really nice. Now, the full on. How do you think? How do you think it went, the whole podcast? You like it?
It went pretty good. We sort of got sidetracked in a few cases, but I think we covered some interesting topics, covered some differing viewpoints, and also covered the large amount of work that CA still has to do to polishing some aspects of the game.
Yeah, we covered a lot of things. Yeah, it was so nice to have you on, actually. It was, I think this is going to be the longest one yet. That's nice, we're expanding, but we still got things to talk about. Even though I get more and more sidetracked now because I let my you guys who get on the show and girl get a little more sidetracked, and I think that's, I don't know, people have to leave. I hope that more people will leave comments on what to improve about the podcast, what I should do, and what guests should or shouldn't. I don't know what you think. You have listened to some of the podcasts, right? If not, I would be offended. So yeah. Well, great. That was Total Warcast number 5. Yeah. And thank you to Fallen Hunt for being on. It was great.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this was. Sorry for like this last took so long to get it up. I think it's 2 weeks since the last one. I'm sorry about that, but it was my vacation. I had my birthday celebrated, blah blah blah, and I will be back next week, hopefully. I have a lot of exams, and we have something in Norway called Russeti, which is like we get a hell of a lot drunk and such like that, so I might not get time, but I will do my best. Now, thank you to Fallen Hunt for joining me this evening, and say goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Yes, nice. Okay, I'll see you next guys next time.